Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. We are bringing back Prime Minister David Williams, and he's going to address a lot of the questions that people had. His topics and his concepts are way out of the box for most people, very different paradigm. It's hard for people to wrap their head around it, but it's really good, I think, because it gets you thinking differently. And so he first wants to address questions that people have. And then the second part of the interview, we start talking about Vatican City, City of London, in Washington, D.C., and the history of that. We did not get through all those topics, but we will have them back, and we will be talking more about it and diving into different elements. There's a lot here that we can cover, but we did touch the surface on the history of the Vatican and how it ties back to Rome. So I don't want to take much more time. Let's get into that interview now with Prime Minister David Williams. Ready?
Yes.
Hi, David. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. How are you today?
I am doing great. I am really glad that you're back. We are going to cover the Vatican City, Washington, D.C., and also the City of London. And then we're going to bring in the Knights of Malta. But before we do that, you wanted to do this too, cover some of the questions that people had from the last show. And should we dive right into those questions right now?
And possibly the one before. Just in general, I would say, you know, you and I talked a couple of nights ago, and in doing this, is people want to say, well, this is an interview, and they've made some comments about me not finishing certain thoughts or whatever. And they don't blame it on me. They actually blame it on you, but I don't care, because people always blame something. If I was having a conversation with them in the same venue like we're doing right now, they would do the same thing.
It's a conversation. And I think people don't realize that my shows are more conversations than just interview, where I throw a question and it's more that sterile. Because if I don't have a conversation with so many people that I interview, they wouldn't, right. It would be a very... I have to try to, you know, get that character out of him. But with you, I'll interrupt sometimes, because if there's something that needs to be clarified or I don't understand, and I know that there's a lot of other people that might not as well.
Well, and everybody has their own filter. So here's something, and I've learned for years over human nature and learning human nature, being in sales, being in business, and doing the website. Website was the biggest education I ever had in human nature, by putting out the material that I put out, because I didn't do interviews like this. I literally pulled up documents and I read it to people in black ink on white paper, because in 4 years, no one ever refuted or rebutted anything I had to say, because you can't argue with the black ink on white paper. For instance, I know one of the comments that has come up here is about admiralty law and different things. What does admiralty law mean to you? I'm sorry, Your Honor. Let me demonstrate for you real quick. Your Honor, I'm here today under admiralty. I want you to rule in admiralty law. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm here today in common law. I want you to rule in common law. I told everyone on the first program, there is no law other than contracts. That judge, I don't care what venue you want to say it's in, and admiralty is under common law. The judge is going to go, well, let's see what we have here. What is the contract that we're going to be judging in here and ruling on today? Is it a citizenship contract? Is it a contract to buy a franchise? What contract are we talking about? What was the agreement? What were the responsibilities, the duties, the rights that were gained by the contract, the mutual agreement, and what is the pains and penalties clause?
So basically, it doesn't matter what you call it. They're going to look at contracts. You can call it whatever you want, but contracts.
I taught this for years. It is only about the contract. That's all it's about. And it all starts with the citizenship contract, because I want to address this admiralty thing real quick, because they keep bringing up that international law is corporate law. That is absolutely and unequivocally untrue. It is not corporate law. It is treaties, conventions, concordats, accords, anything that you want to talk about where societies are coming together, the leaders of these societies. Now, let me ask you a question real quick. Does the word society sound like corporate law to you?
No.
Okay. the law of nations, although we use this term law of nations, and I'm going to get into this real quick because this is going to come up later when we get into the three controlling mechanisms that come out of what I call the priest kings. We're talking about the city-state thing. The controlling mechanism here is people are just caught up in words. The language rabbit hole, out of the 13 rabbit holes I identified on my website, the language rabbit hole is the deepest. The word nation comes from the Hebrew word nashah. It has to do with dealing in debt and dealing in usury, because in their world, symbology and phonetics, frequency, is everything. All, you know, it's like the elite family member insider said. There's a interview that was done, and you can actually find the document online. Now, I read documents. When I read, I'm looking at the power level, and I can tell that the person is either writing from or reading from based on their intelligence, based on how they're forming their thoughts and how they're forming their words, and also based on whether or not they get upset, because that family member insider never got upset. They never got upset. So the word nashah, going back to that, it comes from the Hebrew, which means debt, because I just said the word nashah. Why in the English language would a T be pronounced as an SH?
Why?
Right off the bat, we're talking, go ahead.
Yeah, why is that?
Because it was done to confuse and deceive people. The CH was always a K sound. The word China is not the word China. The English changed that for Britain when Britain got in there and won the Opium Wars and took over the Silk Road and all of that. So you have, even today, I used to hear it from people that came to me and talked to me, visited me from Hong Kong and China. One of them was an American, been living there for years. He said, man, every time I look around, all I see is French symbology on corporations. He said, they run everything over here. So the power structure running everything behind the scenes controls in these three different ways. Language is the first control mechanism. The CH was a K. That's why, for instance, this is going way off path of the questions. We'll come back to that. But this is why everything you see in front of you, the elite are controlling. And it includes Hollywood. Hollywood has basically been told by the CIA in books that people have written that it's run by the CIA. But the information gathering networks are the biggest thing that are under their control. Rothschild had the biggest network of spies and saboteurs and information gatherers. So when they put these messages out in the movies, like the word church, there's no reason that the CH would be pronounced the way it's pronounced today. It never was in history. If you look at the etymology, it says it comes from the word Kirk. And one day I'm looking at a television show called Star Trek, and I'm like, well, the Earth is on a Star Trek, and it looks like Captain Kirk, the church, is running the Enterprise.
Okay. A lot of people like symbology, and they really like to dig into that because it is a history. It builds up from that. But let's get into a couple questions that people have, because I think we could do a whole show later on symbology. Okay, well, one of the questions that somebody had was Delaware, and they were talking about the Treaty of Paris, and you were talking about the 12 colonies versus 13 colonies and Delaware not being part of that original colonies. Can you explain that?
Well, here again, let's go back to mindset and people and things running through filters, because what I saw in the comments was I was being taken out of context in what I was saying. I wasn't trying to say that I didn't understand why Delaware wasn't there. I know why Delaware wasn't there. That's irrelevant. The point I was getting to was the false history rabbit hole that we keep dealing with here, because we were told that there was 13 colonies. Well, if there were 13 colonies, why didn't 13 colonies sign the treaty? That was my point. Now, they will go into all this explanation, and I already know what Delaware is, and it's under chancery law, so to speak, which is really irrelevant because Delaware, like all the states of the U.S., are under the U.S. Constitution. They can't even secede, according to the agreement. The reason they can't secede is because they can't leave without paying that debt. That is the contract. I mentioned debt repeatedly last time when we talked. And the borrower is a slave to the lender. You can't just walk away and not meet your obligations. Now, there's a way to get around that if people understand tort. If those debts are based on tort and tort activity and you can prove it, then you can just offset the debt by the tort, something that wasn't ever considered until some friends of mine and my network started talking about this 10 years ago, something along those lines. But Delaware not signing it, my point is, why is it not there? Now, later on, when they did the Constitution 6 years later, one of the things that people don't know about false history is Rhode Island wouldn't sign. They wouldn't sign the Constitution, and actually George Washington sent troops in there to make them sign. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is everybody keeps going back to this two Constitution thing, and I covered it in the last interview that we did, the last conversation that we had, which is the Constitution itself says that the Congress has the power to pass all laws necessary and proper. So if they want to write two constitutions, or if they want to do like France and write five constitutions and revise that constitution five times in the next 150 years, like France has done theirs five times in the last 150 years, then that's their business. If you are not in government and you have no say-so about it, you continuing to argue about it, complain about it, or say anything about it is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You've given your proxy over to them to rule for you, and that's what they're doing. So what does it matter if they set it up corporate? Now, here's where the fallacy of all this lies, even in the false history. It doesn't matter what they did in 1781. If you go back to the ruling in Brown versus the United States by the first judge in the United States, Judge Marshall, in 1811, it says specifically in there, the United States of America being that original grand corporation. United States of America being the original grand corporation. The rulings in 1811, have it on my other computer here, the one that, you know, the monster one, the one that has, yeah, the one that has probably 5,000 hours of just PDFs on this international law and subject matter. If you were to sit here and try just to read the PDFs on this machine, this is, you know, one of the things that I have talked about. Ignorance does not help this situation. Running things through filters, you know, one of the things I sent to you an email, I'm going to pull this up real quick, was a list of source material that we won't do it on this show, but I think it'll be better to post the source material on the next show, which has to do with the subject that we're going to talk about here with the three city states and how that works. But there's lots of quotes that Brian put in here, lots of quotes that I put in here relating to ignorance and how the difference. Aristotle himself was asked, "Sir, what is the difference between the educated man and the uneducated man?" And his response was, "The same difference as between the living and the dead." So the point is.
So what does
is,
that mean? Yeah.
Well, what it means is like Jefferson. I said this in the first interview. Jefferson himself said it. Those that expect to be ignorant and free expect what never has been and never will be. So finishing up on this thing with Delaware. Well, the comment that was made in there was that the Treaty of Paris is void. That is untrue. But then the next comment was, it was void and it needs to be rescinded. Well, if it's void, it means it's already been rescinded. This is what I mean about when you can't, it's not just the level of ignorance, but it's about being double-minded, taking things out of context when people say them or when you read them. If you can't read a document for the words that are on the page, like when people, sometimes I'll read something to someone out of the Constitution, I'll go, well, that's not what that means. I'm like, well, first of all, you don't get to rule on it because they don't care what you have to say about it, but these are what the words say.
Well, let's go on to another question that someone had, and he was saying that Mr. Williams should take his privilege and run before they disappear him. He said they allowed you to get your situation. And then he went farther and said some other comments. The 10 amendments do not provide any rights to individuals, period, other than due process, which is kind of what you were saying. Due process is decided by the magistrate. And then he went on and said, the 10 amendments are limitations put on the U.S., no rights to individuals. He keeps saying that about the U.S. But the big thing is, you know, why don't you take your status and run, and they just allowed you to do it. So can you comment on that? And then also comment on what he was saying about the 10 amendments.
Well, let me start with the 10 amendments first. And that is, it does not put a limitation. The sovereign does not put a limitation on the sovereign. They didn't ask his permission. And this was all done years ago. I brought up several different things related to case law in our interviews already. The Paddleford case was one of them, where the judge told Paddleford, it's clear the Constitution is a compact, and equally clear you're not a party to it. So he's absolutely correct. You are not a party to it. That Constitution, and in my opinion, after all the court cases I've read, it gives you no rights either, including those 10 amendments, because they did it for themselves and their posterity. And if you're not their posterity, then you're not their posterity. And
the power never. So all those comments, all the people talking about how our founders gave us this rights and we have the greatest country on earth and we have all this freedom. What are your thoughts towards that? Because that's a real, you know, bursting of the bubble for so many people.
It burst my bubble. That's the whole thing that people don't get about this. I was in the same condition back in 1998 and 99 when I first started reading this and looking at my wife at the time saying, is it possible that everything that we've been taught is a lie? Because the words I'm reading here on these documents don't match what I was taught for like 35 years. And so it's 35 years worth of programming that I had to unravel. Now, that's going to work in any individual. And the amount of time it takes to unlearn it is the time that you went on a trip in the wrong direction. Now you got to turn back just to get to point zero again.
You have to unlearn what you've learned, and that's a hard process.
It's harder than actually learning it correctly to begin with. It's way harder than learning it correctly to begin with. So going back to the 10 Amendments, and there was another comment, I don't remember, it's not this same person, but they said the same thing. It's why Americans have no rights. Or going to the Delaware comment where the treaty and all those things have been rescinded or void. Great. Once you know all of this, how does that help you? I mean, there's so many websites where people just talk and talk and talk, and they want to type and type and type, and they think somehow or another, I believe they believe this, that they feel inside that because they have expressed it, somehow or another, that made a change in the universe. It made a change in their contracts. It didn't mean anything. In the last show, I told you what Alexander Haig had to say, right?
I don't remember, but repeat that, please.
Oh, well, it was the quote when they did the march in D.C., and one of the reporters said to him, sir, what is the government's policy or opinion about the march here today? He said, let them protest. We don't care as long as they keep paying their taxes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that statement. Yes. Okay, well, go ahead.
And I'll tell you what, now, you said, too, even on the other show, you said, well, that's actually kind of sad. It's not funny. It sounds funny. But there was somebody else that made a comment to that effect about, well, why now I got to listen to this guy tell me what George Carlin has already told me. Yeah, you know what the problem with George Carlin telling you that? Everybody laughed about it. He told you had owners, that they own you. And then everyone laughed. And guess what? It's not funny. And the difference in me and George Carlin is I'm not making a joke out of this. I'm trying to show people what the solution and the remedy was already written into how societies operate in accordance with the law of nature. Law of nature being the law of nature applied to societies and sovereigns, or i.e., as they call it today, the law of nations. Now, you did have a real quick, I want to address, there was someone that asked a really good question about, is the Vitale's law of nations the only thing that are really going by? That one has been ruled on more by the Supreme Court than any other, but Pufendorf, Wolf, and the other people who have written about this stuff for centuries and centuries, going all the way back to Livy's History of Rome, which mentions the Law of Nations as far back as 384 BC. This is the culmination. This is how societies have been operating for thousands of years. And the right to get out of it, I mentioned the word society, and this is not corporate at all. This is all about contract, compacts, agreements. Customs and usages are nothing more than agreements. And this issue keeps coming up with common law. Common law is what's common to the land. The United States is not British common law. All the courts in the United States were set up as vice admiralty courts, and it's always been that way. Now, what does that mean? It still means it's all contract. But the common law of Britain is not the common law of the United States any more than the common law of the United States is the common law in China. So I'll challenge anybody. You think you've got some kind of argument, you want to go put it in front of a judge and talk about the Constitution, the common law? They'll tell you real quick, you bring up the Constitution, the common law again in my courtroom, and I'll put you in jail for contempt. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this I'm speaking from experience. I mean, I've got tons of it.
I know you do. By the time that you're a prime minister of your own country. Okay, so let me
just show you this real quick.
I have one more question that I need to, before we get into the meat of the interview of, you know, moving on.
Okay, I'm trying to. What was the last question? I'll make sure I answered that fully.
Weather, why don't you just take your position and run with it before they make
Oh,
you
wow. Just
disappear?
disrupt.
And they allowed you to have your position.
Okay, don't forget your question. But why would I? This is a copy, and I have the originals, but this is a copy of correspondence from the court. This is federal court. I don't know if anybody can see it. Federal court. And on here it says that I told you I changed my name, and I did that after I took the position, but back in 2012. But in 2006, when I'd taken a position as ambassador, this is addressed to me in the old name as ambassador, Dominion of Melchizedek, at 201 East Church Street in Benson, North Carolina. Now, if they're going to give me that kind of recognition, why would I run? This is another one that was mailed years later that I'd asked for something out of the same court, and I actually sent them a package, paid them $30 to send me a CD out of my court testimony that day, which was back in 2006, November 3rd, 2006, and I needed to get another record that I didn't have. They didn't even have it on hard copy. They just said, "Well, let's just send you a CD." So I sent them the $30 from the Dominion of Melchizedek, and it was addressed right here by the Minister of Foreign Affairs to send it back to me. And I put a self-addressed stamped envelope in that for them to send it to me. Addressed to me is the way I wanted it addressed. And the way I wanted it addressed was 201 care of Dominion of Melchizedek, 201 East Church Street, Benson, Diplomatic Mission. Not only did they not send it back in my envelope, they put it in their envelope. They folded mine up, put the DVD inside of it, and hand wrote on there everything that I had written on my document, which says Dominion Melchizedek, Diplomatic Mission, care of Diplomatic Mission, Dominion Melchizedek, 201 East Church Street.
But
So no matter.
now they address you as prime minister, and a lot of countries have recognized that, correct?
Four. And there was five before I got on board that had those kind of recognitions. Like this one here, I sent you a copy of this. This is the newest one that came in this year, 2 months ago, and they're asking me now. This is from Uganda. That we're talking to them about setting up a liaison office. And then I was supposed to go to Tampa tomorrow, but the guy from Haiti is going to Haiti on Monday, and he's going to be talking to Haiti about doing what they would agree to do in 2007 through our Minister of Education. He was going to get it set up down there to where we could have a liaison office there. So both of these countries here are talking to us about having liaison offices. All of this goes back to one thing. Why don't I just run away? I told everybody, I'm here. I'm a businessman. I'm here to do business. Now that I can do business with immunity, I'm going to do business with them at the top. I'm not here to run. I'm here to build. And for those that want to come on board and join it, if they're looking for how to do business with immunity, if they will give up that stupid word sovereignty, where they think that they're a sovereign, you got to understand universal principles, and they're out there everywhere. No man is an island, in the verbatim minutes of the UN speech in 1945, Truman himself said, "Men have learned long ago that they cannot live unto themselves, and for lasting peace and security, if it's what you want is security, it says men of goodwill must come together, unite, and organize." That's what we're doing. So why don't I run? What would I wear? Where would they not find me on the planet if I run?
Well, or just be quiet is what he meant. Okay, well, that was good. That was you answered it. Okay, now there's another question. This is the last one.
Okay.
He said he questioned about it started with 22 people that were going through the route that you're going through. And then it ended up just being down to how many people from 22 it went down to yourself and someone else? Was it just two of you?
There's more of us now, but from the original group, yes, there was it actually was 21 people. We filed a case, a tort claim and a class action in December 6th. Let me figure the year. December 6th of 2004, we filed a claim as United States of our world. We had filed a treaty with Bern, Switzerland. So it looked like, this is before I knew what I was doing, but it looked like, this is when I was finally figuring out that captioning documents is extremely important and self-governing. We were policing ourselves, but this was the case where I had found the right of self-determination, and I brought everybody together. And that was all that showed up was 21, but we put a case together to go against the United States, against the IRS for the false records and the things that they do based on a tort claim, similar to the Declaration of Independence. That's a tort claim as well. The king is garrisoning his troops in our house. We don't like that. the king is hauling us off the mock trials. We don't like that. And all those kind of things are still going on today under something we'll talk about later, too. We'll get into this. I mentioned the priest kings. This is where the doctrines of parents patrie came from. And the state still views themselves as the daddy state. That's why you get hauled away when they decide they want, when daddy wants to spank you. But we filed that claim. It was 21 of us. Yes. Okay. That's what you asked. Why is it only two left? One of the things that
let me specify how he worded it, because it was good. He said, "What my question is, what is the downside? You know, why did only two people do it?" He says, "Why would someone go back to a life of supporting trafficking of drugs, children, body parts, etc.? I mean, they had this ability to do what you're doing, and they decided not to do it. So, what is the downside?"
The downside is all the detractors out there that want to say you're a fraud. You're an idiot. You're trying to subvert my constitution under the U.S. You're trying to do something else. I've literally had people, I had one guy put out a Facebook page. This has been 2 years, 3 years ago, where he told everyone that I had been found guilty of running a Ponzi scheme and had to pay $55 million in restitution. I've never even been arrested. I mean, and then he blocked everybody around me from getting on his Facebook page to answer the question. And then he actually put on a picture up there and said that I was the original founder of Dom. And the guy's like, "That guy's got red hair, dude. What are you talking about? The founder's
got red hair." So basically, you're introducing people to a paradigm change. And like everything else that's a big change, it freaks people out and they react in a massive way. And I've seen this a number of times on my show. Trust me, because I bring up people that get people to think differently. And this is a whopper of getting people to think differently. So you're just getting that typical hardcore reaction to something that they think is so foreign. And people don't want to deal with that.
There is another downside. I tell people all the time, the right of self-determination was put under peaceful settlement of dispute, so there's no need to fight a war anymore. However, there is a tech war going on. It is not as easy today to get through their system, so to speak, and get the registrations and stuff done that you need to get done, because you're dealing with people just like would be listening to this. You're dealing with people that sit behind a desk that they don't know anything either. And there are no documents that are set up and says, okay, this is a guy that seceded. This is a guy that self-determined.
Oh, that would be a nightmare.
This is an ambassador for a foreign territory or whatever. Those kind of documents and stuff they've already done. So most of the time what I have to do is I have to do addendums and things, because I'm not going to sit there and put myself in one of their boxes to be in a box. That's just not going to happen.
Dealing with the workers of the government that have no idea what the heck you are or anything, and so they just...
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
It can take a lot longer to get things done. But I look at it like this. At least I'm not fighting a 9-year war from 1774 to 1783 to end up back under debt under the same king and the Rothschild Trust that's been going on forever anyway. I mean, what logical reason does it matter? What logical reason does it make to run a society into debt for 240 years? That's just, and this is the whole thing about going back to Law of Nations and the word society. Book number one, section 212, I think Brian sent that over to you, where it talks about that people become a part of the society by tacit acquiescence because they naturally follow the conditions of their parents. Then the other thing is, in 220, it asks, can a person quit their society? Yes, it can, if they don't find it advantageous to remain in it once they reach the age of discretion. The age of discretion for me was 40 years. It took me 40 years to finally reach the age of discretion, where I could go look at the whole picture and go, wait a minute, this is not to my advantage at all. Why would I stay in it?
Okay, so let's get into the rest of the interview, the main part of the interview. I hope people got answers to the questions they were looking for. Okay, so how is Washington, D.C., the Vatican, and the City of London different from other cities? Most people don't realize that they were established differently and they have different purposes and they're not even part of the country that they're in. So can you explain that?
Well, technically they are and they're not. I mean, the Vatican itself is its own nation state. It's 109 acres. It's an independent nation. But even before that, I'm not sure. I remember reading the question and I'm like, okay, but to fully go into this question, it's like you really have to just go back in time and look at the power structure of how all of this worked. It's not necessarily that they're different cities or different than any other city. It really is all based on the global power structure that's in place. So the thing that has been talked about for years among patriot groups or people that have done this type of research is that the inner city of London is separate from the regular city of London.
It's its own country, right? Just like Vatican City is its own country. And same with Washington, D.C. Go ahead.
Washington, D.C. is, let's look at Washington. Let's start with Washington, D.C. This will be something people understand because they talk about the 10 square miles. The 10 square miles of D.C. is its own city. And District of Columbia is part of the United States. Now, what is the United States? Well, this United States is the governmental structure over the society called United States of America. This is another thing that I don't know if it got into questions, but I know it was a question that was responded to by someone who's one of my students. When somebody said that there was a Constitution of the United States and a Constitution for the United States, there is no such thing. There is no title to that document whatsoever. That document has a preamble and it says, "We the people of the United States, forget all the garbage in the middle of it, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." That's two independent entities. And it is the Americans that went bankrupt. They didn't pay the debts. So now the people of the United States become the bankruptcy trustee for that, which is why Article 6, Clause 1 and Article 6, Clause 2 are the first primary articles in that document. In a way, I love it. I did the interview with Keith Hansen. They like to do things backwards. They put the most important stuff at the bottom. You know, the other stuff at the top was just how they're going to run everything. So D.C. is 10 square miles, as per the agreement, the contracts and all that stuff they wrote. And it says it's the seat of the government of the United States. And people say, see, they don't have jurisdiction outside the seat of government. Well, that's like saying that if I'm sitting on a tractor that's got a 10 square inch seat on it and I'm driving it, I don't have jurisdiction over the rest of the tractor. Well, that's nonsense. I control that tractor from that 10 square inch seat, just like they control the entire United States of America, Guam, Puerto Rico, and technically the rest of the world under the Security Council with the UN. They control all of that from that 10 square mile seat. That's what it is. Same thing is true in London. That's the financial center from the world. And this, the so-called alleged spiritual center of the world is the Vatican. Now, they say that the Vatican actually didn't get their autonomy as a state or recognition as a state until the 19th century. But it doesn't, it's really, really irrelevant. The Vatican was running everything for years and years and years. They were telling the princes of France and England and everybody else what to do. And if they didn't do what the Vatican said to do, they'd just excommunicate the entire country, which meant the citizens would get all upset because if the Pope excommunicates you, obviously you're all going to hell. And so a lot of kings would lose their throne. They'd lose their power because of having disputes with the Vatican.
So the Vatican had and has a ton of power. Can you talk about, well, before we get into the history of the Vatican, Washington, D.C., can you finish telling us about, now that's where Congress and the White House and all that stuff is set and they run the world. But from a technical standpoint, is it's just another state or is it different?
I call them city states. It really is like the old concept of the city state. Rome was a city state, and Rome, the Roman Empire, was huge. It was one of the questions you asked about the and this was mentioned in one of the questions too, or the comments on YouTube. They talked about the Roman Church. It wasn't the Roman Church. It's called the Holy Roman Empire, and the Holy Roman Empire never fell. And so they used the mental influence. That's why I call it governmental. So the word mental comes, or ment, mind comes from the word ment or mentis. So this is the same thing they told everybody in the Matrix movie. This is about controlling your mind. If you've got 400 million people or you've got 4 million people in a nation state called Great Britain and the king's trying to get something done, but then the clergy and the church interfere and they got all of your 4 million subjects convinced that they're going to hell, well, they're coming after you for that. Now, I'll bring that up for this reason. One of the presentations that is up online right now is The Truth About the Magna Carta. It starts out with a guy named Walter Veith, and he does a real good job of what he calls the Battle Over Britain, going back to the 1100s and in 1213, because there was things that were signed, the Compromise of Avranches and different things where literally the clergy had gotten so in control of running people's mindsets and Britain feeling like they were all being excommunicated, that the king had to go to the Vatican and repent to the Pope and literally laid the crown of Great Britain before the feet of the Pope. And then rented, this was the declaration that King John signed in 1213, they had to rent the crown back from the Pope for a fief to become a fiefdom under the Holy Roman Empire so that they just didn't lose their kingdom and get kicked out.
But then the king ended up creating his own church to separate from the Vatican, to gain more power.
They're not separate. Everybody thinks they're separate, but
so what was
separate.
The point of that?
The point of it was, it's a pretend game that we've given you some sort of religious freedom. But everything that has to do with the word Protestant means to protest. But they didn't change anything. They still follow the same rules, the same creeds. The only thing that most people do when it comes to the church, like let's say the Protestants, so to speak, is, I mean, I've been around these religions forever. I know I'm in the South, the Southern Baptists, they pretty much tell you that all the Catholics are going to hell. And they'll say, well, Catholics aren't Christians. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that Catholics aren't Christians. I'm like, what are you talking about? They're original Christians. What are you missing here between your head and between your ears? They're the original. Now, because that Bible was held by copyright, because they want to claim that there were books that were written before 300 AD, the first copies that we actually really find of the Bible are two, the Codex Vaticanus and the Codex Sinaiticus, okay, founded St. Catherine's Monastery underneath Mount Sinai. These books are old, but they're technically the only original copies of anything they have, and quite frankly, those aren't originals. But regardless of that, and even those two don't match. They don't match each other. And none of the current Bibles today match those two books. So the point is that when I write a document, let's just say this is a letters and agreements and stuff between me and Uganda. Who owns this intellectual property here? This is between me and Uganda. Does anybody else have a right to change this? No one has a right to change my contract. No one has a right to change anything about this, not who it's addressed to, Dominion of Melchizedek, to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Nobody has a right to tell me how to interpret it. And everybody's running around. You got 29,000 so-called denominations of churches. 29,000. If you think they had any agreement, you'd think they would only have like one, right? So they don't have any agreement. So all of this stuff, this divide, conquer, divide the mindset, conquer, divide the mindset, conquer, and then pit everybody back against each other. This is the Jesuit plan. It's the Rothschild formula, divide and conquer.
Well, I know that the division is a plan, because when people are divided, they're easier to control. Well, they're sidetracked, so you can control the money and the other things that they don't understand, and they're messing around with things that they don't care about. But now you said that Rome never went away, and they actually migrated over to the Vatican. And did they also migrate over to the city of London? One being the spiritual control and one being the money control to control the world.
Well, originally London wasn't necessarily the money control. The Vatican has always been. I mean, the streets are paved with gold over there. And the Caesars were the ones that controlled gold. So what literally happened was it became easier to control people through religious edict than it did through governmental edict. I mean, people protest about your government. But if you got them convinced that you're like the representative of God, and then you tell them, look, you're going to hell, or you got to say three Hail Marys or else you're going to have a real problem, and some demon's going to show up, and your children are going to be sacrificed or whatever. And by the way, if you're a heretic, you know, we'll either put you on a rack or we'll just drown you people. And you're, I mean, all of this religious paradigm.
It's amazing what people will accept if they think their religious leader is telling them that.
Yes.
It is quite amazing, because they're not thinking for themselves, unfortunately. But go ahead.
Hang on 1 second. Sorry, for some reason my computer wanted to do a Windows update for me. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
All right. It's kind of like Adam Weishaupt, who is attributed as being the founder of the Bavarian Illuminati, said, "O mortal man, is there anything you can't be made to believe?" And so people don't sit down and read. I've told people forever, the Bible is the Bible's the number one selling planet on the book. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. There is the number one selling book on the planet. Bible's the number one selling book on the planet. Yes, that's true. It's also the least read, especially percentage-wise. People don't read it, and then they don't understand it because it does get confusing. I know. I was in it. I probably read it several. I mean, I have no clue how many times I've read it. But I've also read the not all the Quran, but I've read parts of, you know, a lot of the Quran through English interpretation or whatever. And I've also read some of the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Bhagavad Gita's, and all of that. Because technically, if you really wanted to start with this, I mentioned the priest king. This really is where it all started, is going all the way back to Egypt, and before that to Sargon and Nimrod, in Nimrod being in Babylon or Babylonia, and then Sargon being in Samaria.
Okay, so how did it start there and then move on to Rome and then to the Vatican?
Well, I don't know how. I can't explain how. I just see it in the words and language. This was something that became extremely important to me. It was almost like a light bulb went off in the year 2000 when I turned 40 years old. And I started seeing the language, like I just mentioned, Samaria. See, the IA in the Greek is the Hebrew Y, but that's also the Phoenician Y, and this also comes from the cuneiform out of Samaria. How does Samaria get the name Yah in the end of it? And this name is common all around the planet. I look for the commonalities. It is really not a name. They want to call it a name. I don't care what they call it. But we can see it almost in every single culture that's around the world. Kenya, Ethiopia, Italia, Phoenicia, Philadelphia, Galatia. The word Galat means exile, by the way.
America? America is not Yah.
California, Virginia, Brasilia. It is the most common thing. Dementia. D-E meaning no, ment meaning mind, Yah, no mind of Yah, no mind of the creator, meaning you're opposite, you're demented, you got no mind. So these are the things that are important to them because they're the ones that have created these languages. They created the symbology. Letters aren't letters. You don't write a letter with a letter. You write a letter with symbols. You know, they were glyphs, hieroglyphs, of the Aleph, for instance. They want to talk about El or Elohim being God and all this kind of stuff. Well, that's not even correct. It's Al. It starts with an Aleph. It's A. It's Al. Elohim, like Allah. So these are the commonalities that I saw. I was able to start tracing cultures as they moved because you could see languages and how they were common. And then you could also see the changes and how they were being introduced. So the language became, for me, like the first mechanism of control, because if you split up people's languages, it's a lot easier to make them want to fight each other.
Well, if they speak the same language, then they are going to get along better. That's what Genghis Khan did in China and was able to unite China.
Yes, and Alexander the Great wanted to do that when he was rising up his empire. He wanted everyone to speak Greek. Now, Rome was different. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this, I want to bring up the Matrix movie real quick. For me, I'd love to do a show about movies and how they're putting the messages out there, because the architect told Neo when he first came in, the Matrix is older than you know. From the time it started, this is now the sixth version of the Matrix. Rome was different. Rome was a different, quote, empire than the rest, because Rome assimilated. Rome did not want everybody to be like Rome. Rome only cared about collection of taxes. And if they destroyed your temples and they would go in and burn your libraries. They would obviously always destroy your history. That way you couldn't go back and reclaim it. But the first thing they would always build back was temples. And then they would build a temple in Rome and say, oh, come on over here. We don't care how many gods you worship. We'll worship and all. It makes no difference. And this is how all roads led to Rome, because all roads did lead to Rome. This is the word universal and what they call the universal, quote, universal church. That's why the word Catholic. You go look it up in the dictionary, it means universal. So what is the Vatican today? It's Vedic. It comes from the word Veda, Vedic, the Vedic Kana. Kana meaning the word for priest. Now we're back to the priest kings. So we can see this movement from, I'll give you another word that became very important in all of this. And this was something I just found recently in a Sumerian Guy did a really great presentation showing the words and languages and how they move. Now, the reason that this is important, that I say it's important, is they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of cuneiform text out of Sumeria, out of all those regions and areas. So it's not like they don't know this. It's like the story of Gilgamesh and the flood. That wasn't first put in the Bible. That was done by the Sumerians at Sumer. Oh, by the way, going back to Yah real quick, London's original name was Londonia, just so you know. And it's in Beritania. And the word Barit means contract, covenant or contract. Anyway, so what we see over time is we see in the pharaohs, we see Alexander the Great, we see the Caesars. The word that became important was the word Kai or Ki. That came out of Sumeria. It means earth. But the C that we see in the modern day language of the English language was not originally a C. It was a G. And it was pronounced as a guttural. So like Gaia in the Greek, Gaia, they say Gaia or Gai means earth. But that came from the K-I or however that was pronounced, however it was written in the symbology. You can't say that these things were, this is the letter K. It was a symbol that they pronounced. It had a phonetic. So that's why this disruption of things and not, they focus on phonetics. They focus on symbology. I'll give you an example of a symbol that's right in front of everybody that they don't see. The Masonic square, you've seen that thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's got the G in the middle. That is that God there, I have called ye gods. That G there stands for a man. That G is a man. Why? It starts here at the head and comes around, and the middle part is the palic. That is the God man speaking to you. This is the priest kings. So for me, I saw how it was coming through down in the language and people following this. And what I kept seeing repeatedly was how the priestcraft, like in Egypt, they had four different languages. They had the high language of the priest, which was the hieroglyphs, but they had a language for the commoners or common law, right? So we pull that forward and we go take in a movie like, say, Braveheart. Braveheart, back then when people were judged, and they showed it in the movie Braveheart very well, you didn't just stand in front of a civil judge. The ecclesiastical judge was there too. Now, I don't have it up here in front of me. Maybe I do. One of the things I did on my website, and I talked about, I did a whole series on it. It's one of our teaching sessions. And I can't find it here in front of me. Yes, I can. This is the overriding law of all law right here. If we want to use this word law, all contracts. Elements of ecclesiastical law. Now, I've just printed out the front cover of this thing. This is three volumes, and they're all about this thick. Okay? Now, how do I know that ecclesiastical law is running everything? Because all courtrooms are set up like a church. They have a prayer bench, they have pews, and the judge is wearing a robe. He's the priest. He's also the banker. And the word bench came from the Latin word banca.
Well, isn't it true that the Vatican created the first banks and that they have more money than anyone else?
There's a great book. I'm gonna go ahead and give this one as source material. This is a great book about money, because what really fascinates me about archaeology and uncovering all this kind of stuff when you're looking into it is they want to look at the pottery. They want to know what these people look like, what they wore, what their hairstyles were, all that kind of stuff. There's only one book I've ever read that talked about the archaeology in application to what was traded and called this thing we call money. Because there is no such thing as money. I mean, I did this with an agent that showed up. I talked about it in 2006 for 5 hours with an agent. We sat there in Kinko's and talked, and he started talking about money. And I pulled this out. I said, okay, money, what is money? Show me, because I told him in court 2 days prior to that, there is no such thing as money. And he said, I know you guys, your gold and silver. I said, no, there's no such thing as money. And it's like I did with the agent. I said, show me anything you guys call money that has the word money written on it. This doesn't have money written on it. This has note. This says this is a debt. This is a note. Okay. So, and then of course the agent said, well, there's a money order. I said, no, that's an order for money. Show me money. And then he said, well, silver used to be money. I said, silver's not money. Silver is silver. Now I want to go down that path just for a minute, because this is part of my experience in the courts. When I say everything is contract, and this is why I had so much respect for the federal judges. As a matter of fact, I said it so many times, I would not want their job. I mean, because the amount of ignorance that comes in front of them people every day, I don't know how they stand it. Frankly, I just don't. I'm here in Atlanta right now, and I've already heard two business deals going on. I'm here with a friend of mine. I'm in his office, and we've been friends since 2001. He's looking at buying a franchise here. They have another business, but that he got into 6 months ago, and that guy's already caught that guy embezzling money in line. And then he's got another thing where he bought a property on a real estate deal, and now there's a problem with that based on the owner lying. So people are wanting their freedom, but I can tell you what they look at the top and what I saw at the top. They're looking for honor. And that's what I found in those courtrooms. That's what I found here. They honored their agreement. Why don't I run? Because they honored everything. And so this is the whole thing about nation states and this doctrine of parens patrie, the priest kings. There's even a document I have that we just found here recently, going back in the 1200s and 1500s, it's called pater patrie. The king was the daddy. He was the father. And his job was to take care of incompetents and those that could not help themselves. Well, I don't know if I ever mentioned it already. I think I may have on one of the programs in the United States Code. The very first definition in the code is of insane, insane person, and lunatic, which means, it says in there, it means every idiot. And I asked Nate the other night, we were talking about
this. Is that
this.
Everybody? Essentially? I mean, do they think every idiot is almost everybody in the country, all us citizens?
No, anyone. Anybody who would tolerate being 240 years in debt and being $20 trillion in debt, yes, they are viewed as an idiot.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of... That's a painful reality.
All of this was painful, Sarah. It was painful for me. It was painful for me realizing that my energy, no matter what we call it, current, currency, whatever. See, this is why Rothschild, people think that they've done something that they didn't have permission to do. And Rothschild didn't say I didn't have permission to do it. He said, give me the control of a nation's currency, and I don't care who passes the laws. But he didn't say, I'm taking it. He said, give it to me. Give it to me.
And we gave it to him.
Yes, absolutely.
Here you go. Make all the money and rule us. Okay, so.
Well, okay, let's get real about the Phoenicians and the phonetics and how all this rolled down. Because this is what I kept seeing.
We have about 6.5 minutes.
That's why I said we got to do two shows.
Yes,
on this.
Yes, we do.
This is not even scratching the surface.
Sure.
Like I said a while ago about the name or the word Ki or Kai. See, I could trace it around. They went from Akkadia, Kadia, to Cairo, and that was Egypt. Egypt was not called. It was called Kemet or Kemet. They say Kemet. I don't believe so. But Kemet was called the land of the dead. That's why the sea and cemetery. Just go do an etymology search on cemetery. Type it into that little Google Translate thing and go click on how many languages and see how many times K comes up instead of C. Egypt was called the land of the dead. They had the book of the dead. That didn't really mean dead. It had to do with a religious or spiritual thing about dying to yourself, because they believed that ignorance was like the biggest evil possible. But I remember going for a walk one day, and I was walking by a cemetery and went, no, that's a cemetery right there. See? This is the confusion of it. So where did they go from there? Oh, let's see. We had Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon or Babylonia. And then Julius Caesar. See, again, no C. If you watch that movie, what Mel Gibson did, The Passion of the Christ, they were speaking in Aramaic. And it was Julius Caesar. No J, no C. Why? Because they didn't exist. They didn't use those things back then. And the J also became a Y. Just like the Greek, I mentioned the Greek. The letter for I, you know, we're all a bunch of hicks here in the U.S. Well, that's an iota. That's not the way the Greeks pronounce it. It's yota, which is the Hebrew yod. It's a Y. So all of, like I said, this is scratching the surface. So I've talked about this, and we'll get into it more, but the language rabbit hole to me became... I could see these people moving around. And of course, Julius Caesar, and then you had Caesars in Germany, Czars in Russia, and the Caesar still today. Obama appointed 30 Caesars under Obama during his administration. So things haven't changed. It's still the priest state. It's still the daddy state. It's still under the doctrines of pater patri and parens patri, where they believe that, you know, we have to take care of you. And because of that, we now take from you what we need to do it.
Okay, to wrap up this episode, how do the elites, hopefully you can answer this in a couple minutes, how do the elites educate their children to understand what they're part of and not get sucked into what everybody else is getting?
They start training them at a very young age. I've told people many times, if you grew up in Buckingham Palace, the things that I'm talking about right now would not even be foreign to you. See all those comments on YouTube? If they had grown up in Buckingham Palace, they would have been, yep.
Well, who else is taught like that? The Rothschilds?
All of those families. And there's a great document that you can learn some of this from. It was called The Occult Technology of Power, because the word Occ, that's another, this prefix thing is all a bunch of nonsense. Occ, like ocular, means to see. Okay, to see the culture, occult, occult, to see the culture for what it is. The language, they just like, I mean, it's almost like a joke. They're giving you, you know, grammar means grimoire. It came from grimoire, grimoire school, the magic school, where they teach you how to spell your words. So now you're spelling, you're casting spells. It used to be write and scribe and scribble and things like that. Oh, now we're spelling words. Every time I was turning around back in the year 2000, it was like, oh my gosh, this is driving me insane, because they have taken control of this from the time you're born. And I'll leave you with this one on the language, and then we'll wrap this up. Who else does it? They all teach their children. They teach them very well.
Well, how do they teach them? Do the special schools that they go to teach them, or do they have to do it at home?
They have special tutors. They teach them themselves. In the Occult Technology of Power, you're going to see that even this guy who was turning over his, quote, empire to his son, he put them all through tests to see which one was going to see through his garbage and then rise to the top. And then after he picked his successor, he said, you and I will now work together for the next 20 years until we become one. Wait a minute. My father didn't tell me that. See what I mean? So people think one thing about these people and the opposite is true. John Adams, him and his wife taught John Quincy Adams enough so that at age 14, he could be the ambassador to Russia and the courts of Versailles in France. That's how powerful this is. It really is powerful.
So, what was I going to say? I had a really good question. Oh, So the Matrix movie, when you're connected, your brain is connected to the Matrix. The whole point is when they disconnect their spine and their brain and they're out of the Matrix, it's getting your mind out of that. That was the symbology of the Matrix to what we have today.
Yeah, it's like when they were in the fight scene and he said, I see what you're trying to do. He said, yeah, I'm trying to free your mind. And then they went to the jump scene where he said, you have to let it all go. Fear, doubt, and disbelief. Free your mind. And so that mental, governmental, it's governing mental. And that G, that capital G, that G stands for God. God over men. That's what the government is. The N in there is the Aleph. They just put it in there because the Aleph is the Alpha. It's a power symbol for them. That's why they put the N in there, in the word governmental. See, I like I said, I started seeing these things. And I can tell you that when I say it starts from the time that we're children, people in the United States don't even know the vowels in their own language. I learned by doing this and looking at the phonetics. And finally, one day I said, all the animals I'm listening to, they're communicating in vowel sounds. And my wife was like, where'd you get that from? I said, I don't know, but let's go look it up. And so I'm pulling up dictionaries and I'm finding out that a vowel sound is anything that comes through the breath channel with no obstruction. So I started writing down words like Harry, hurry, roar, cow, dog, all of that. I was like, okay, pick out the vowels and the consonants. Cow, the C is a K sound, but the OW is a vowel. Harry, there is no obstruction. H-A-I-R-Y, they're all vowels. And so I actually started finding writings that told me there's 9 vowels in the English language and 17 vowel sounds. Now, there's a dispute over that in some of these English books that you'll read, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, and I told them this in court because they asked me in 2003, why would you guys do all of this, especially with the words and language? And I said, 400 million people in the United States don't know the vowels in their own language. My answer was because the H is a vowel. And he said, who cares? And I said, well, 400 million people in this country don't know the vowels in their own language. Don't you think someone ought to care about that? So from the time we're born, that language program becomes like it's like a CD that's slid into a computer to start programming you. And the words in a court don't mean the same thing that they mean out here on the street. So that's why I say when people start talking about common law, admiralty law, all those kind of things, it's irrelevant. They just judge in contract. What is your contract? First contract is your oath and allegiance to that state. And
okay, so to wrap this up, since we have very little time, where can people reach you? And I'll put the link here on this video.
Where can they reach me? Just go through David@therightofselfdetermination.com. Just send me an email.
And what's your website that they should go to?
Well, the website they should go to is deprogrammingseries.com, because that's where the DVD set is. And oh, by the way, there's been people that complain about the $1,000. You could buy my DVD set, or you can go pay $400,000 at Harvard to get the same kind of degree that's in the DVDs, except they're not going to tell you about self-determination at Harvard. They're not going to tell you how to get out of the box.
Okay. So we're going to have to end it with that, since we don't have much time, and we will have you back to finish up this conversation. And thank you so much.
Here's the thing. I wanted something different for me, and I do want something different for others, but they have to make the choice. The problem is choice.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you so much.
All right, Sarah, good to talk to you.